Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach. The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and Learfield IMG College. Brought to you by Wilson, proud to be the official basketball of NCAA March Madness. Shop the official NCAA game ball on Wilson.com. Now, here's your host, Tim Doyle.
Welcome back to another episode of the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. I'm your host, Tim Doyle, and today we're joined by George Washington head coach, Jamie and Christian. Coach, this has been a wild, wild year of trying to navigate these waters as well as keep your team focused. How challenging has this been for you?
Well, I think we'd all say as coaches, it's been one of the most challenging times that we've encountered. But I would say as people in general, I mean, it's been a challenging time for everyone. And so I think just trying to keep that in perspective, what we have an opportunity to do, right? I mean, there's two times a week, hopefully you get a chance to turn on an A-10 game and get a chance to watch your favorite team. And, you know, just trying to provide the world a little bit of enjoyment, trying to allow a level of energy that people can come and enjoy every single day. So just having a level of perspective that everyone's struggling right now and everyone's embracing a challenge right now and just trying to understand where we are within that.
You know, I've met you a few times, always upbeat, always positive. Was there something you came up with philosophy-wise with your team or your coaching staff that you tried something out, it's worked, and you've stuck with it over the last 11 months?
You know, we've talked a lot about, we kind of gave them like the 10 COVID commandments. And so we kind of created this document at the very beginning. And it's just kind of interesting, but it's just trying to really help our guys focus on, you know, just the day-to-day and understanding that there's going to be a lot of starts and stops through the year. We're all creatures of habits. You know, we're in sport. We have these routines. I played baseball in college as well as basketball. So I have all these routines that I have built in, and we try to build our program based on routines and habits. But, you know, right now what's going on around us is preventing our habits to being built at the level that we'd love for them to be. So it's just having a level of understanding that it's gonna start, it's gonna stop, it's gonna restart. Our reaction to what happens, we can control, and that's all we can control sometimes. So we try to just do a great job of focusing on those things. You know, you'll see me wearing probably a ton of different shirts, but one of them will say embrace a challenge. That's something we've really tried to embody over the last month, really, with our group. All these challenges that are around us, we just have to embrace them. You have to change the wording in it and change your mindset with it. Things are not set to slow you down. They're set to change your path and your direction. And if you're agile enough, you can move on to a different direction. It doesn't mean that you can't be better once you learn those things. And so just trying to help our guys focus on that. And as a leader, I have to embody that.
Yeah, I need that in my kitchen. All right. Embrace the challenge every day. I got a 6-year-old and 4-year-old. And you're right. It is about embracing the challenges and finding those positives. You're a young guy, but this is already your third head coaching stop throughout your career. What factors have you considered in the jobs that you have pursued?
Well, I want to work with great people. That's the first thing that I look at. It's honestly never been financial. I haven't once looked at that. I mean, I love what I get a chance to do. I love the people that I get a chance to work with. And so when you're looking at making a lifestyle change, which every time you take a coaching opportunity, whether it's an assistant or director of basketball operations or as head coach, you're making a lifestyle change. And I want to be around great people. And we have that here with Tanya Vogel. Just an amazing athletic director. She's got an amazing staff of people that love and care. And I think that I've always tried to find that, you know, Lynn Robinson Phelan at Mount St. Mary's. She's amazing. She obviously was the daughter of my head coach, Coach Phelan there. So having a chance to really spend time with her and learn from her, you know, as a young head coach, I thought was really important. And then going to Siena and working for Darge there at Siena, just an amazing person. What he's able to build there at Siena, it has been amazing. You look at the season ticket holders that they have. You look at the level of basketball they have at Siena. So that's been the first thing I've always looked at is the quality of the leader that I'm going to be working side by side as we're trying to build on this vision.
You know, you made the jump to a head coach in 2012. What was the most challenging thing about that transition from assistant to head coach?
Just recognizing that your energy just empowers everybody in the building. You know, when you're a basketball coach and you're, you know, most of these arenas have a ton of offices around them and you have other sports around you, just owning your energy, I think, is super important. And when you walk in that door, no matter what's going on, everyone in that building needs to know that you care about them, that you care about what they're doing, that you understand the importance of their position, their job. and just trying to bring that kind of energy every day, no matter what's going on, you know, because sometimes you wake up in the morning and you might not be in the best mood, but it's not about you. And leadership isn't about you, it's about others. And in order to be able to help others reach their full potential, I've got to be bringing great energy. And I want to do that every time we step into the building, whether it's the janitorial staff, whether it's the people that are checking us in, you know, I got to bring great energy for them and just trying to embody that.
How often do you communicate with Shaka Smart? You were an assistant with him at VCU, had great success. We had him here on the NABC podcast. He was an electric interview. He says he can no longer eat Subway sandwiches because he ate so many of them when he was an assistant coach. He can't even look at it anymore. Don't worry. This podcast is not sponsored by Subway, okay? But how often do you communicate with him throughout the actual season when games are being played?
Yeah, I text with Coach every single day.
Wow.
We've had, our relationship has grown so much through the years. And obviously working for him as an assistant coach, you have a level of relationship that's built completely on respect and understanding what that person has to go through. And as an assistant, trying to support your head coach to help them become the best they can be to continue to make the organization the best it could be. And so, our relationship has changed from that to now where we really communicate about a ton of things. I mean, we talk about our families. We talk about things that are going on within our lives. We actually don't talk about our teams as much as we used to. And I think that's a sign of the level of growth that we've been able to have in our relationship. We've talked a lot about mental health. We've talked a lot about physical health through this time period. But he's always been a person that I could look up to, that I could ask a question, I'm going to get a real answer from. And hopefully he feels the same way with me when we have that level of communication.
Are you guys like texting emojis? Like, is it reached that level? Like, does like the strong arm come out or the fist come out? Is there an emoji exchange between you and Coach Smart?
We text a few things. I mean, every day he'll send something that's positive and uplifting and something that's thoughtful. I'd love to always send back something with support. We're sending back and forth different podcast ideas or different books that we're reading. And emojis are included in that. I mean, it's a great relationship to have with someone who is just so insightful, so thoughtful, so caring. And anytime you can continue to have people like that in your life, it's obviously just a tremendous value.
Can I get on that text thread? I don't know if I'm just throwing it out there, but I need to wake up to some positive feedback from Shaka Smart and Coach Christian here as far as, good things going on in the world. That's amazing. I got to ask you this because he runs the Havoc defense, right? That's what VCU is known for. You run the Mayhem defense. Now, I am from an age of coming to America, right? It kind of is like, they got the big arch. We got the big arches. This is like McDonald's versus McDowell's. Did you sit around being like, damn, I like Havoc, but I can't use it. What other word? And I feel like you got that creative bone in you.
Well, I'll tell you what was interesting. So my first job, I was working as assistant coach at Emory and Henry College in Southwestern Virginia. We've had great head coaches come from there. Nathan Davis at Bucknell, John Coffin, IPFW, Mike Young at Virginia Tech, just to name a few, Jimmy Allen at Army. So we've had a ton of guys that worked there almost in succession. So we're really proud of our Emory family. But my first job there, we're forgetting Bob Johnson, and our style of play, we called it the Emory and Henry running attack. And we actually subbed every 35 seconds. We played 20 plus guys a night and we press and trap for the full 40 minutes, really kamikaze-like. So I get, Coach gets a lot of credit for Havoc, and he built Havoc at VCU, and it was amazing to be a part of. But by the time I got to the mound, I'd already known like I was going to press and trap and get after it, because my first experience and being able to press and trap and be aggressive like that, and something we haven't been able to do here at the level that I'd love to yet. But being able to do that, just what it does inside your locker room, giving everybody ownership, everybody ability to step on the floor, and the energy that it creates inside the arena. And, there's so many things I always loved about it. And I felt like that was a great way to play. And I got a chance to learn from one of the best, Bob Johnson, and experiment with a bunch of things, like mad scientists like with Coach Johnson. And then I got a chance to watch Coach Smart do it with Havoc at VCU and do it on a higher level, and how it kind of changes depending on the players that you have. Again, I've got a great foundation of coaches that I had a chance to lean on.
It's interesting because you play such a unique style, right? You have to recruit players that fit that system. I played for Mike Jarvis, ironically enough, former George Washington coach, right? And when I got to St. John's, I had this moment of like, didn't you watch me play? I can't guard a chair. Like, you want me guarding guys full court? Like, I was a bad fit there. Transferred to Northwestern, Princeton offense, good fit. Like, when you're recruiting a young student athlete for your style, what are things you look for?
Well, you know, number one, you had a chance to be with Mike Jarvis, who's amazing. He's been amazing to me being here. I've been able to lean on former head coaches here. One of the reasons I feel like we're destined for success here is because I've been able to embark some of the wisdom for those that came before me.
Could you ask him? Could you please ask him? Like, I loved him, but like when I got to school there, I was like, Coach, you know I can't guard anybody, right? I am all. Ask him what he's thinking bringing Tim Doyle to St. John's, and then we can get on a text chain, me and you and Jarvis, and figure out why he actually recruited me there. But go ahead, finish your story.
Coach Jarvis and I both believe we can inspire people. So maybe we can inspire you as an offensive player to maybe play some defense, you know? I think there's nothing wrong with looking at someone and seeing more and believing that you can get more out of them. So, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be with a guy like Coach Jarvis and be able to spend some time with guys like that.
You know, he really did an unbelievable job of embracing – the George Washington culture, because what he had there was unique. You know, what you have in DC, and him and I became relatively close in the year and a half that he recruited me and then the year that I played there. You know, he talked about using the embassies and bringing in foreign players, right? He was bringing in Alexander Kuhl and Yinka Dare. Even growing up in New York, I was familiar with those teams, Shante Rogers. And then he'd always throw it in our face when we weren't practicing well about, oh, my teams at GW used to do this. But I like, you have this broad, you can go recruit anywhere. That's a great luxury.
Yeah, and we are. I mean, we're definitely stretching out around the world. We're stretching out around the country. You know, we also have this thing here being in DMV where you have some of the best high school basketball. And so we're just trying to do a great job. You know, we're trying to start at home and do a great job here in the DMV. You know, again, some of the best high school basketball players and some of the best high school basketball coaches. You know, some of the top AAU programs are all based right here. So if we can have a great footprint right here, that's going to give us a great opportunity. You know, kind of using Coach Jarvis and Coach Lonergan did, and Coach Hops. All those guys reached out around the world and pulled some amazing players. So we want to do a great job of that. And those guys have a tremendous advantage, right? Like, they were out there recruiting the world before everybody else really was. And you know, now we're trying to kind of get that niche back. And I know we will. Again, you talked about being here in D.C., the embassies, the energy, the vibe that you feel here, being in an international city. You know, it's just different when you go and recruit international students. It gives you a chance to get someone that maybe you couldn't get right here, and a chance for them to really feel comfortable here in Washington, D.C.
Could you dive into a little bit of the conversations you had with your squad? I know that we talked about COVID protocols as a coach, but what we went through and are going through right now as a country is so unique. And obviously you talked about being in DC, and, you know, I remember when I was a student athlete, I was not involved with the way of the world in politics. And trust me, those were not conversations we were having in the locker room. We just weren't. Now, I believe those conversations are happening. How have you embraced what's going on right now in the world and brought it over to your team?
Yeah. You know, one thing being here in Washington, DC, it's right smack into your face. I mean, you know, when those people stormed the Capitol building, we had to vacate campus. So, I mean, it's right here in front of your face. So, you know, we have a great responsibility to make sure that our players understand what's going on in the world. Many great decisions are made, you know, two blocks from here is the White House. So a lot of great decisions are made two blocks from here. So we want to make sure our guys are just, you know, understanding and being students of the world. One thing we've done here, and, you know, Coach Jarvis did an amazing job of it. And, you know, I actually emulated that before I got here at other places because I looked up to Coach Jarvis so much. You know, we actually have our leadership enhancement workbook. And so each year we work through different forms of leadership. We work through guys discovering their mission, their values. You know, I really want these guys leaving here with a high sense of purpose. And because of that kind of dialogue in the locker room daily, I think it allows for us to be able to have tougher conversations, right? Like, you can't talk about trust inside a locker room unless everybody in that locker room is having a level of vulnerability in talking about things that are difficult. So because we start that way, and we kind of start that honestly in our recruiting process, like, I want a guy who's not afraid to be vulnerable, not afraid to have a tough conversation, because I think that person does well here at GW. You know, one thing we say here at GW is GW changes the world one person at a time. And so we need people with great ambition and great knowledge and great seekers of knowledge. So we try to identify that in recruiting. And then once they step into our program, we're constantly, you know, and our group chats are probably a little bit different. I know every group chat in the country probably has who's better, Kobe or MJ, but ours will have an article about what's going on in the world. And then we'll have questions that we want to ask about that. We'll be at the center circle and we'll talk about those things, because I want to create an environment here where these guys, like for us, like we have to solve and work through some of the problems of the world within our locker room first. And if we don't do that, and we don't give the guys a platform to be able to do that within our locker room, when they graduate from here, they won't be armed with the ways to communicate difficult things. And I think that's very important for all people, but I want to make sure we're doing a great job of that for our players here at GW. I'm really excited about the progress we've made over the last 18 months or so, because I feel like we're making a ton of progress in terms of being able to have those kind of conversations.
You know, I got to give props to Coach Jarvis. When I was at St. John's, he did an amazing job of bringing in different voices for us to hear throughout the year. Now, as a 19-year-old, you know, I had a more difficult time appreciating it. Now that I'm an older person, you know, I haven't actually talked to him since I transferred.
But we need to connect
with him. Yeah, seen him on TV. We've never been in the same circle again. I've had dreams about those practices because he used to practice in the morning. Mm-hmm. So obviously, Coach, I kind of cut down on my social life, if you guess what I'm trying, because I knew I had to be up very early. But that was a philosophy I think he adopted from John Chaney when he decided to coach at a city school, right? When he was at GW, maybe a little bit different type of player. He goes to a city school. Maybe it's a way to kind of keep guys on the straight and narrow. I don't know. I'm just speculating because I lived it. It was something that, let's just say, I wasn't a huge fan of the old 7 a.m. practices, but it did kind of curtail me from staying in at night. But getting back to his point of like bringing in different voices, he brought in a sports psychologist. Yep. And I was always like, not a great free throw shooter, high 50s, low 60s and stuff. And he gave me a routine just from like, he said, flash a picture of every one of your family members before you shoot your free throw, but take a dribble and flash a picture of them. Mm-hmm. And he goes, this is gonna be 20,000, 10,000. He goes, you've shot a million free throws. This is all just muscle memory. And it was basically a way to relax yourself at the free throw line. I never told anybody that because I always thought it was like kind of weird. But now that I'm older, I'm like, that was an amazing thing. I ended up shooting high 70s for the rest of my career. So Coach Jarvis, I didn't know this was gonna be a therapy session. So thank you very much for that. Really appreciate that. We never got to the tournament at St. John's. We won the NIT that year, but you got to the tournament in 2014 with Mount St. Mary's. Do you look back on that now like, wow, that was pretty cool that happened so young in my coaching career?
Yeah, you know, I think we got there in 2014 and 2017 when we had a class of guys that had two rings, which was great. And, you know, I don't look back. You know, I don't look back because, you know, right now I'm just chasing this next one, you know.
Yeah.
Like Tom Brady says, my best ring is my next one, right? So you're always trying to chase that next one. But I think it's all these little interactions that you have. You know, I do have some pictures up from those championship runs and the guys that you connect with. And I think what people underestimate is the value of camaraderie that's built during a championship run. Those hugs that you see when that confetti's falling on top of you at the end, there's some real value in that that just is different. It's such a game changer. And it's like, you never forget that feeling. You know, we could talk about it right now the hair on my arm just stands straight up.
You could rub it in some more. I never played in the tournament. So thanks. No, I appreciate it. Let me hear your stories that I could live through you.
and you want your players to all feel that feeling. And, you know, you do recognize in that moment, you know, like you go through and you shake hands with the other coach and you turn around and your family's on the floor, right? And so you walk towards your family, you hug your family. And when you look out on the floor and that confetti's coming down and your guys are in that moment, everyone there recognizes that everything we had gone through to get there was worth it. And I truly feel like until guys get there, they don't think it's worth it. And in that moment, you recognize that everything we've gone through, all the tough conversations, all the tough practices, all the losses, all the wins have allowed us to be in this moment and to truly, truly be able to enjoy it. And I want that for every one of our players.
Last question for you, and we appreciate you joining the podcast. Your brother is in the DC area. He's an assistant coach in basketball with the Wizards. Playing better as of late. Exciting team to watch. Bradley Beal's going to go out and get you 30 points every night. How often are you guys in communication about your individual teams?
Man, we talk. I mean, now we probably talk 4 or 5 times a week, you know, either text or call. You know, he's got 2 young boys. I've got a young son. Our wives are really close. So we've really got this kind of neat supportive network here in D.C. you know, and we're not, we did, we grew up about 2 hours from here. So we've got this neat thing where we can kind of talk, communicate about a lot of different things, but we're talking almost every single night after his games, we're texting, after my games, we're texting. And, you know, it's great because, you know, he's such a positive figure as well. And, you know, there's moments after the game, win or lose, where you're saying, oh, I got to do this a little bit better. And he'll just give you a different perspective. And then he feels I do the same thing for him. And it's been great. I mean, it's great having a little brother, because, you know, there's already all these things that are built into that relationship. But it's great watching that person strive out to do something that's really difficult. I mean, not many people have a chance to coach in the NBA. You got to take a lot of chance to be able to do that. So really proud of him for taking those kind of chances. And then every time I watch him, I'm just amazed the coach he's become. The growth that he's had over the last 10 years as a coach, it's just been great to watch. And it's been great to be a part of. And I would tell you, when we get to Christmas dinner, you know, there's usually some X's and O's before we get to Christmas dinner. But when we get to the table, there's no X's and O's. But those moments before that, I really enjoy. And again, we're really fortunate to be so close together. We know this time might not last forever because he's a guy that's climbing the ranks as a coach. And so I'm just appreciative of the time to be able to be with him.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, right? When you're coaching, the journey that you've had, multiple stops, your brother, you know what's lying ahead for him with this journey. He could end up anywhere, right? He could be out west, down south. You just never know. What's the actual journey been like for you, your family, the different stops you've had? Were you prepared for this when you started in the coaching game?
You know, this journey has been so much better to me than I could ever imagined. You know, when I started out, you know, I was an average player at Mount St. Mary's, took a Division III job over a couple Division I jobs as operations, and kind of just took my future in my own hands because I wanted to coach and get after it. And, you know, when I was making $12,000 a year at Emory, I could never imagine that I'd be at George Washington. And, you know, I always looked up and I always thought George Washington was an amazing place. And again, growing up, watching Coach Jarvis's team, watching Coach Hobbs's teams, and I just grew up loving those teams and watching them play. And, you know, so the journey to me has been amazing. There's been some highs and lows. There's been some moments where I've been crushed to my knees after losses or after a guy left our program. There's been moments where I've had to rise up and lift our program up to new achievements after we've had some losses and stuff. And, you know, I think if you really can enjoy every single day, the highs, the lows, the good, the bad, but I think most importantly, just keep loving the guys that you're with, you know, recognizing that we're getting a chance to coach a game. We're getting a chance to coach kids trying to live out their dream that maybe don't recognize how to get there yet. And so because of that, they're going to strive some, but they're going to make some mistakes. And some of those mistakes might be on us. Right. But if you can take that and have that level of humility that it's not about you, I think the journey can be a lot of fun. And I've been blessed to have the journey that I've been on, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, we've learned a lot during this episode, right? Embrace the challenge. That's going up in the Doyle household. Okay. That's going up in the kitchen there. My free throw routine. You're drawing up X's and O's with your brother at holiday dinners. I don't know if the family's okay with that, but I love it. I want to know, get a back. I always like to set back screens because it seems like you're helping out your teammate, but the reality is you're actually helping out yourself. It's a selfish move, a back screen. Don't tell any of your players that, but it's been awesome hanging out. Coach, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate having me on.
And thanks for tuning into the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. Coach Christian, GW, Mike Jarvis, great history there in DC. He's going to have things rolling shortly. And thanks so much for joining us today on the NABC podcast.